Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome to Fly on the Wall Finance. I am your co-host, Tony Shore. I'm here with the one, the only, Jamie Malm. Jamie, I am so excited today. I'm excited about our show because it's something I know a lot about, and that is college planning. I have three kids are all either, well, Adam's out of college. The other one just graduated. The other is in the middle of it, so.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's top of mind for so many families, no matter what age their children are. It seems like we're always talking about how in the heck are we going to pay for college without kids drowning in debt, which is the biggest obstacle. So goal for today, anyway, is to talk about that dream that we all have to help our kids graduate, to do so as debt-free as possible. And the way we do that is by first understanding our options, making smart financial decisions. So we're going to cover everything. We're going to talk about scholarships and grants and federal student loans, the right accounts to save in, really how all of that ties together.
That's great. It's needed. I wish I would have heard this show, you know, 15 years ago, right? Or 20 years ago. Hindsight's always 20/20, but it's so important. I mean, luckily my one daughter got a scholarship, full tuition. So she graduated without any debt. My other daughter's going to a relatively inexpensive school, so she'll graduate with some debt, but not much. My son, unfortunately, he would have had zero debt. He paid his way, and we helped him a little bit through 4 years of college, but then he went to medical school. So now he's got about $50,000 of debt yet. So that student loan debt. And now they're saying, hey, you got to actually make payments and pay it off. So,
right. Yeah, we'll talk about all of that. The biggest thing is you don't want surprises. And so if you know what to expect going into it, you can plan accordingly. You can budget accordingly. You don't get out over your skis where it's like, oh gosh, I didn't know that I was going to have to start paying this early, or I didn't understand that these were some of the options that I have. So we're just going to talk about kind of what to expect.
Yeah, that's good. So I assume we're going to start with the early years. I mean, if I've got a high school freshman, it's probably not too soon to think about college, right?
Yeah, of course not. And in fact, most families are thinking about this way before that. And the sooner the better. So, you know, I have families that come in that have infants, that have toddlers, that have grade school kids, and they're like, what can I do to start putting money away for college? So it isn't ever too soon, but it also isn't ever too late, because really there are ways to go to college or trade school or some kind of education where you can make a living and create a livelihood for yourself with really any budget. And I say that not to be flippant, but yes, there are ways that you can pay for college even if you've done no planning. But really the sooner the better.
So, plan early and plan often, as we always say, right? And then the other analogy is it's like planting a tree. When's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Today.
Today.
Yep. So today's a great time if you didn't do it 20 years ago, right?
So for the sake of this show, we're not talking about like, well, what if I have a little kid that I'm trying to sock money away. That's
sure.
You know, we can do 529 plans and grandparents can contribute. And there's all things that you can do there. I'm talking about when it gets down to the nitty gritty a little bit, that's like, all right, I've got somebody that's going to be entering high school, which FYI, it is not called junior high anymore, which I guess I knew.
I'm old school. It was always elementary, junior high, and senior high. When I went to school,
well, it's middle school.
Now it's middle school,
which I guess I knew because it was middle school when my kids were there, but it was called the McPherson Middle School.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it in the grand scheme. I told my niece, like, congrats, first year of junior high. My sister said, it's not called that anymore. You're showing your age. So we are going to say junior high / middle school is over. I'm entering high school. This is really the time we start to drill down. And first thing that we should be thinking about is grades, which our kids sometimes don't like us, you know, harping on them, but GPA counts. And
oh yeah,
colleges, scholarships, they're going to be looking at the entire transcript. So we really want to zero in on a strong GPA from the start. And I know for us, Emma is my oldest. She's 23. We have Eva, who's 19, and then Ashton, who's 17. And when Eva, so be 2 years ago now, she was starting to apply for colleges, be her junior year. And she's starting to really look at where do I want to get accepted and how do I get a scholarship? I think it was a big eye opener to her that it was like, oh, you weren't just harping on me to get a good grade because you just wanted me to. That is now impacting me. And our son, Ashton, was like popping his head into the room going, wait, what? What do I need to know? And so he's been really focused on, one, he wants to get an athletic scholarship. But if he can combine that with some academic scholarships, that's going to start with a strong GPA. And sometimes this can be, this is sort of confusing because we, I think, tend to harp on kids to go get those AP classes, go do the college credits, which, yes, we want to do that. That can be huge if you knock out college courses in high school. It reduces the amount of classes you have to pay for later and cuts down on graduation. But we don't necessarily want to load up on classes that are so difficult, they're going to be a stretch for your child and it's going to drag down that GPA. It may actually end up costing you money in the long run.
Only if they're a really good student anyway and a straight A student, then they can tackle that. You know, one of the three, I have three kids, one of them extra special smart. I mean, just amazing. And she got a great GPA. She took a ton of AP classes and she got a full ride scholarship too.
Sure.
In a business, in a business program, because she's a great writer, had to write three essays and do interviews. Yeah. And, but I mean, she did all that on her own. We told her, no, we couldn't send her to the school she wanted to go to because it was too expensive. And she went out and got a scholarship.
Yeah. Too. Good for her.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was great. And one out of three, Jamie, not bad, I guess. I don't know. No, no, they all did. And then my son did well, and we're seeing where our youngest ends up at this point, but you're right. I mean, GPAs really count for a lot, and you want that academic scholarship to be as large as possible. I mean, pretty much every college gives some type of academic scholarship, but if you have decent grades, but you don't want to jeopardize your GPA by taking too advanced of classes.
There's a trade-off there.
If so, the student isn't ready. Yeah. Good point.
We maybe save, you know, several hundred dollars to not have to pay for classes later, but we give up thousands of dollars in scholarships because those classes were too hard for the student that time, lowered the GPA. So it's a trade-off, right? Yeah, we want to make good decisions based on each student. The other thing that you just touched on is, and I think most kids know this, but they don't probably proactively look for all of the opportunities. And as parents, we get busy. We're doing our own thing. We're trying to manage all the kids stuff, but extracurriculars, leadership roles, sports, volunteering, things in the community, anything that they can get involved in that makes them stand out. Like you said, your daughter had to write 3 to 4 essays. You've got to have experience. You've got to have involvement. Yeah. You've got to have things that you've done to be able to go showcase that on those applications and in those scholarship essays. And there's a lot of money in that. I told my kids, you better be doing it like it's your job because they're going to pay you like it's your job. Right. So
if you're the president of certain clubs, especially if they're you know, academic clubs. But my daughter was the president of her 4-H group. She was the president of her debate club or debate team. And she was in band. She did all these activities. They love that. I mean, that's the colleges love that.
Yep. So I think it's really about laying the groundwork here. We want kids to understand the end result. And if they can start to think about GPA is like money in the bank.
Yep.
The things that I'm doing aren't just so, yeah, I'm want it to look good on an application. So I think a lot of kids are going to say like, it's not hard to get in. Like, I'm going to be accepted. It's not going to be hard to get into the schools I want to go to. Most of us aren't Ivy League potential,
right.
Although there are many that are, and that's great. Sure. Yeah. Same kind of groundwork. But I think those that aren't, that don't have those lofty ambitions of, you know, look, I'm not trying to get into Harvard, I'll be accepted. And so they discredit some of those things that traditionally you've seen college kids that have those lofty ambitions strive for. But think of the money that you could be getting in scholarships if you were more involved and if you focused on some of this groundwork that you do early. Yeah. Can be a huge payday for you later, which lessens the burden on you financially or lessens the debt that you're going to come away with. And I think kids need to see that big picture.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, Jamie, about free money. We all like the sound of that, free money. What's the difference between a grant and a scholarship, though?
Yeah, oh, great question. Grants are typically need-based. So think, you know, people that maybe have a legit financial need. The Pell Grant's probably the most common one, the most well-known. Yeah. I believe the max for this coming school year is like $7,395, something along those lines. But that can be reduced by your student aid index, the school's cost of attendance, whether you're full-time or part-time. And it's typically reserved for exceptional financial need. Yeah. States and then individual schools, they may also offer grants. And this is where you can start looking into what's my background? Am I military? Are there private grants? Is there something locally that maybe is done for something I'm pursuing? Teaching is a good example. They've got grants specifically for those that are pursuing a teaching degree. Yeah. This is an area that it really pays to do some additional research in because your unique background, your academic interests, there could be some private grants, which I don't have to pay back, that are based on what I'm looking to accomplish, what I'm looking to do post-education, and maybe that fit my my interests, my expertise, my unique situation.
Yeah. Well, and that's great. So that's a grant. They're usually need-based, but sometimes, yeah. And actually I believe what my daughter got was the IHR fellowship, which is partially a grant for academic, superior academic performance is why she got it. So that wasn't all need-based, but a lot of times they do want to access your parents' tax returns to see how much their take home was, you know, and how much income they really have. But what about scholarships?
Yep. Scholarships are the thing that I think we hear about and talk about the most.
Yeah.
These are usually merit-based, right? They're academics, they're athletics, they're talents, they're special interests. I would say focus on local organizations. There are lots of small scholarships that are given out regularly that add up quickly. There are so many. This is something that it, again, pays to do a little research, talk to your counselors, talk to people at school that can give you some direction here. But this is something that absolutely your kids should be zeroed in on and applying for on a regular basis throughout high school.
Yeah. And early, right? This is again where parents should get kids applying early.
Yeah. I mean, the sooner the better, and cast a wide net. Like, you're going to apply for a bunch and you're not going to get the majority of them, but those that you do get start to add up. And that just, the more you can create for yourself as foundational income, the less we have to come up with later.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to something that I also know about a little bit, but it can get confusing, and that's federal student loans, right? I mean, even with scholarships and grants, a lot of families still need loans. What do we need to know about federal student loans?
There's so much to talk about with loans beyond the scope of this show.
A year-long series, yeah.
Yeah, just generically speaking, I think the majority of us anyway are familiar with like subsidized and unsubsidized loans. Those are the two main categories of our federal loans. Direct subsidized loans, they're again somewhat based on need. The interest doesn't necessarily accrue while this or have to be paid while the student is in school. Whereas unsubsidized loans, that interest starts right away. You're accumulating it. They do have PLUS loans, which are for parents. They typically have higher fees, higher rates. Now, back when I was in college, the rates on these loans were, I mean, typical of most interest rates 20, 30 years ago. They were a fraction of what they are now. So now we start seeing even these federal loans. I'm like, gosh, that's significant when you think about the interest that you're going to pay.
Outrageous.
If you drag these loans out for 10, 15, 20 years, which is amazing. The age at which I see some people come in to do retirement planning and they're still dragging these student loans behind them. So good rule of thumb is don't borrow more than what the student will expect to earn first year out of college. That keeps repayment manageable, which I understand is easier said than done. We're talking about, you know, average in-state public tuition being like $30,000 a year. But without any pre-planning, you're talking $120,000 in debt for a kid that probably makes half that if first year out of college. That's a rough place to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Wow. So don't go $250,000 into student loan debt and plan to earn $30,000 out of college. And we see this. This is the problem I see so often, Jamie, is I had a nephew that got a philosophy degree and went to a really expensive private school. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know his circumstances. I think his parents had money to help cover it, but I don't know. And it would have probably been around 200K or, you know, 175K. And boy, getting a job that can cover that, he's not going to get a job. I mean, his first job out of college was at a pottery barn or, you know, working retail. So if you're
it's this debt that then you're like, how am I ever going to get out of this? Well, we have to think about what job are we striving for? What career are we striving for? And if that career doesn't pay, what is a reasonable ratio to what we paid for the education, we probably need to take a step back and think, does that make sense? Or is there another college? Is there another way that I could go about getting this degree? Because there are plenty of options where you're not spending $200,000 for a degree. And too often we make decisions on college because, it's my alma mater. I wanted my child to go there, or it's a prestige thing, or I feel like I can only get a decent college education if they're at XYZ, and we overlook things like community colleges and trade schools and things that would be obviously more cost effective, but you come away with the same degree. Exactly. You come away with the same piece of paper that you need to go get that job. And so we have to think about what is the end goal here, and not get so fixated on, well, I want my kid to have the college experience and I want them to be able to go where I want to go. Well, at what cost?
Yeah.
And if that means that they're drowning in debt when they get out of school, that's probably not best case scenario.
Yeah, I think nowadays people have gotten too caught up in that. And I heard someone say, don't pick a school, pick a career.
Yeah.
Right. Don't pick a college or a university, pick a career, and then find the most cost effective way to accomplish that and get a good foot in the door. You want a good education, but sometimes parents are so wrapped up in names or status that you have to look at the child, how they've done in the past, what is there. Just because you went to a four-year school and had a fun college experience and you did well with yours doesn't mean everybody has to go to a four-year college and have that experience at your alma mater. I mean, that's right. Nowadays it may have used to work that way, but things are changing so fast. I would not recommend that. So what about the timing? Obviously, yes. A lot of parents are probably wondering, when do we do what?
Yep. This is where it can get a little overwhelming because we don't want to wait to the last minute. So we already talked about laying some foundational items, focus on GPA, focus on your extracurriculars, really get that foundational structure in place, like yep. Freshman, sophomore year. Junior year, we're probably taking the ACTs, we're taking SATs, we're starting college visits. Now we can start really zeroing in on what are the colleges, what are the schools, what is the post-secondary education we think is most likely? Summer before senior year, then we really want to start getting organized and serious about our essays, our recommendation letters, filing for the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
The FAFSA.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard to say
FAFSA. Pronunciate that carefully.
Yeah.
This is really the key to those federal grants, the loans, access to many scholarships. So even if you think, oh, we're probably not going to qualify, I encourage everybody to go apply. You also want to start submitting all your scholarship applications. You want to compare offers and combination of things carefully. So organization, I would say here is key.
Yep, it is. Well, let's jump right into budgeting for college then. How should families approach budgeting for this?
Yep. We already talked a little bit that there's a price point really for everybody. You don't have to spend $70,000 a year to get a great education. So community colleges, trade schools can be excellent. They also often allow credits to transfer to larger universities. If you can knock out college courses when you're in high school, I mean, my oldest completed her 4-year degree in 2 years because she went into college with already so many completed.
Yeah.
Now at the college she went to, not only did we only have, she only needed 2 years, but it was a flat tuition, no matter how many credit hours you wanted to take.
Oh,
so she loaded up.
Wow.
It was the same whether she took 12 or she took 24. So she was able to load up. So there's little variances there that are worth looking at. For us, that worked out great because as long as she was able to handle the workload, she shaved 2 years off by loading up with classes. It didn't cost us any more to do that. And 2 full years of tuition were handled while she was in high school. The other thing I think we need to do when we're talking budgeting is involve the kids in those conversations. Mm. Here's what we've saved. Here's what we can contribute. Here's what you'll need to handle. So again, back to the first go around that we had at this, I remember sitting at the kitchen table and we had a piece of paper out and we had like, you know, our line down the middle and it was, here's what it costs for you to go to community college and live at home. So here's how we'll pay for that. Like we'll pay for you to get a college education, but it's going to be at a community college. You live at home. That's how much this costs.
Same.
That amount and you can go apply it to the 4-year state school. But then here's the gap that you will have to come up with. Here's the debt that you're going to then walk away with. So when you step out of that college, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, if this is the debt you have, here's what your payment's going to be. You have to make it real for them. And I remember she was like, what the heck? How would I ever make that payment? Well, you probably can't. So if you can't make the payment, then let's not go into that kind of debt. What do you want to do? Let me
tell
you,
she started zeroing in. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Right. She started zeroing in on scholarships real quick. And she got, you know, a nice basketball scholarship and got some academic scholarships. But I don't know that she would have been as interested, as involved, if we hadn't walked her through. You know, it's one thing for kids to go, okay, so I owe 70 grand. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Well, let's break it down. You're going to have to pay it back over this amount of time. Here's what your payment's going to be. And when they're like, how am I going to make a payment of $1,200 a month? You probably aren't.
You won't be.
So community college, or you've got to figure out how to fill the income gap. Those conversations are obviously specific to each family. What's right for one isn't right for the other, but you've got to be communicating. And we don't like to see, parents give up their own retirement for their kids. It's a balancing act, right? Because it's like, gosh, I want to do both, but you can't harm yourself to help them. That actually is probably going to be harmful for them in the long run. So yeah,
you have a golden, what's the golden rule regarding that? You have a golden rule, right? You can't borrow for, what is it?
Yeah. You can't borrow for retirement, but you can borrow for education. So we got to remember that.
Yeah. You can borrow for college, but you can't borrow for retirement. It's the old airplane analogy when they say, if the oxygen mask drops, you put on your own first before you help your kids. And you can't damage your own financial future to help your kids. You're not going to be doing anybody any good
doing
that. Yeah.
That's right. So when we start thinking budgeting, there are really, I would say, three main plans that we start thinking about as accounts that we can help put money aside. We can help contribute. This is where we go back to probably the earlier the better. If we all of a sudden junior year of high school are like, oh gosh, I should start contributing to something for my child to go to college, it's probably not going to be super impactful to start that then. So 529 plans, obviously the most well-known, they grow tax-free and they come out tax-free when they're withdrawn for education expenses. Some states will give you an additional tax deduction if you are in your own state plan. So this is a question I get asked a lot. Well, can I use any state plan? You can, but you might not get a deduction. I think Kansas is $6,000. You get a deduction for it if you're married, filed jointly. Drawbacks to these obviously are pretty well known. If I don't use the funds for education, I get hit with a 10% penalty to get that money out. There are some new caveats. The Secure Act 2.0 now allows you to roll a portion of those unused $529 into a Roth, but there are some very strict rules. It has to be in place for 15 years. Transfers from contributions can't be contributions can't have been made in the last 5 years. They have to have the same beneficiary. They're subject to Roth contribution limits, and you can't ever roll more than $35,000 ever. So these people with these big unused 529 plans, we don't want to just be blatantly depositing money into these plans for years without knowing, okay, if this child decides not to use it, then the next child can, or the third child can, or parents can use it for post-education. Like, we better have a plan with how we're going to use the funds so we don't run into a situation where we're going to be penalized to pull that out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge. We did use 529 plans for our first two kids.
And I think they can be great. Grandparents can add to it. You know, they're great for it if you want others to be able to add to it. I would watch the fees, the expenses, like the portfolios in a 529 plan are not all created equal.
No.
So you want to be sure that you know, what kind of plan am I in? What kind of portfolio am I in? Is it just an index fund that's low cost? Is it an actively managed fund? Is somebody helping with it? Is it loaded with fees and expenses that are eroding it? Lots of things to know there. So probably worth getting some advice if you're going to do a 529 plan.
It is, because we didn't get the right type of advice way back when we started our two, and we started them at different times. So they were with two different companies and set up two different ways. One was amazing and the other was terrible. Right. Yeah. So we learned our lesson there. And now, of course, we're working with financial services professionals to help us, which is what you have to do. I say don't use any of these without talking to someone, Jamie, like yourself first and making sure it's part of your overall plan. So besides a 529 plan, are there any other options?
The other ones that we hear a lot about are the Coverdell ESA. They can be used K through 12 as well as college. They also grow tax-free for education. This would be small contribution limits. So you're limited to only $2,000 per year. And then the UGMA or the UTMA accounts, which is a gift to minors or a transfer to minors, is what that stands for. Those are pretty flexible. You can use those funds for anything that benefits the child. Just be aware that it does count as the child's asset. So if I go on a 529 plan, that's I'm the owner of that. I control that. If I set up an UGMA or an UTMA, my child actually owns that and they get full control at 18 or 21, depending on the state. So we want to be aware.
Which could be problematic.
What is my intent with this? Yeah. And what's the best maybe combination of plans? So you just want to make sure that in any way that you're doing this, let's just say you're funding your retirement, you're maxing things out, and you know there's going to be maybe a 5 to 10 year period in which you're going to have to scale back on contributing to your own retirement because you're going to be focused more on college. Know that ahead of time and account for it. That way your financial advisor can say, all right, let's show what happens to your plan if we take from here and add here. Do we derail the plan or can you afford to do that? Do we still stay on track? And as long as you know what to expect, we don't want surprises.
Yeah, as long as it's planned for and part of the plan. So Jamie, we're almost out of time, but if we boil all this down, what would you say the recipe is for graduating debt-free?
I would say, think about back to our timeline. Start early, focus on GPA, do the extracurriculars, build a scholarship strategy, use the FAFSA, file for the financial aid, and then we want to focus on then what's our gap beyond those foundational items, what's realistic, and then start consistently putting money in the account so that we end up borrowing the least amount possible. We want to maximize all efforts in all these other areas. So when it comes down to now what's left, we're borrowing only what's necessary.
Yeah, and that's simple but powerful. That's great. So that does it for today's episode. But before we go, let our listeners know how they can get a hold of us to make this part of their plan.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always go to our website, which is ironhorsefinancialservices.com. You can call the office, which is 620-377-6456. And if you need some guidance here, just let us know. Hey, I need a plan. I really need to balance retirement and college funding. I don't know where to start. I've got questions. We'll help you build a roadmap. And we do those for anybody that we meet with initially, just as a free consult. We don't charge for those initial services. So something that we can help you at least get a roadmap and start making some informed decisions.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jamie. Listeners and viewers, thanks for tuning in. That does it for today's episode of Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Mohm.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.